Welcome back to Clinicians Brief, the podcast, the conversations behind the content. I'm your host, registered veterinary technician, Becky Mosser, and we are excited to have back a friend of the show, Dr. Karen Tobias. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have another conversation with you today. We really enjoyed your last visit with us when we talked about gonadectomy. And so I really, really wanted to have you back to have another conversation since we enjoyed our last so much. And so we wanted to talk about your article in the February 2020 edition of Clinicians Brief. And we were talking about improving owner compliance with pet medication regimens, right?
Right.
This is a great topic because honestly, I think it's somewhere we get a little out of control, right? Like we can control what we send home, but not what happens once we do. But before we jump into it, we had a couple co-authors on this that we want to make sure we mentioned. So tell us a little bit about who wrote this with you and what they do and the role they played.
Sure. Actually, I'll tell you the story behind it. And that is that one of the co-authors, Margaret Swalick, had a dachshund who had bilateral corneal ulcers. Margaret Swalick also had a retinal detachment at the same time. And so she'd been seeing an ophthalmologist and putting in eye drops in her own eyes, and then had to deal with this incredibly massive regimen for her own dog, which got very, very complicated. And so she went and talked to Dr. Salisbury, who's a board certified veterinary ophthalmologist, and Karen McClung, who has the Bachelor of Arts and is also very good at designing organizational system. And between the three of them, they came up with not only a medication organization system like a log that Dr. Salisbury and Karen McClung have used very frequently with their patients, but they also came up with a physical organizational system, a tray system that could be used to keep track of all these medications, particularly since both the dog and the owner are putting eye medications in. And that made things so much less complicated that Margaret Swalick actually went and spoke to her own human ophthalmologist. I guess we're all human, but this is one who treats human, and said, "Hey, why aren't you using this system? This is amazing." And I thought, oh my goodness, I just think this needs to be published. And Margaret Swalick's my mom, so I figured, what the heck? Let's go for it and let's get this out there.
I love it. That's so great. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I got an emergency phone call from my mom the other day asking what happens if she takes a particular topic treatment because she had in her morning routine managed to take her pet's medication. And I told her, you have to call poison control. I don't know what to tell you. You are not an animal and I can't help you. But these things happen, right? And when she called poison control, they said, you are not the first. You will not be the last, right? So these things are so important. But what we know truthfully, right, like all kidding aside, is that compliance is the foundation of successful treatment. I mean, it's hard to understand why our clients come to us, pay for the testing, pay for the medication, go through all the steps, and then they go home and they don't use it or they don't use it as directed. But it happens all the time, right?
It does. And I think it's easy when we're on the veterinary side, when we're wearing our veterinary coats, it's easy for us to say, I can't believe this is happening. And we've seen in the veterinary literature that it's reported that 50 to 60% of owners are going to have compliance problems, even with a short treatment course. But realistically, I think if we think back to our own illnesses or our own pets, I have a feeling that giving a monthly heartworm preventative, many of us have failed to give it on time. And so I think we kind of have to think about that, that we're all human and it does become difficult sometimes for us to keep up with everything. And so it's important for the veterinary side of things, the doctors, the technicians, the people who work at the front desk to try and help the owners figure out a way that they can improve this compliance.
Yeah. And from the studies that you reference in your article, this is not just a veterinary problem. Right? Compliance is an issue for us. It's a pets, everyone. What do we know about why people are not compliant?
I think there are a lot of reasons. I think sometimes it's too little time or too much to do, or for people, maybe they don't like the side effects. I would suspect that's similar for our pets as well. You give an antibiotic that causes vomiting or diarrhea, and maybe you just don't like to give that anymore, or it's hard to administer or something. I think that's very true for things like eye drops, or if you have to give breathing treatments to your cat, God forbid. Or if you just have too many medications to easily track those. And I think some of the other things that happen with people are they start to feel better and then the medication becomes less important to them. And maybe that happens with their pets as well, or else they don't feel better fast enough or they don't think it's helping their pets. And they decide the medication is not working. So they're making kind of decisions, doctor decisions they really shouldn't be making. And I think those affect people as well as pets.
I resonate very much with the, I feel better. I'm not going to do this anymore. And I think we're all good for like a few days. Like we're really good for a few days. And then you forget one day and then you're like, oh crap, I forgot. And then here we are, you know, in this like cycle. It happens to all of us. And I guess obviously we want to know how to increase compliance in general, right? Of course, in your article, you talk about two factors that I think are really important when it comes to compliance. And the first, maybe it seems obvious, right? But like it's convenience. And you've already kind of touched on that, but people do better when it's convenient, right?
Yes. And I think that all of us in the veterinary field have heard an owner come in and say, don't you have a shot for that? Because when they're saying that, I want a treatment that's quick. I want a treatment that you give and that I don't have to give. And I think when they say something like that, that's a good indication that either are struggling with compliance issues already or they expect to struggle. And if that's the case, if they're already expecting to struggle, they're already setting themselves up for failure. It's one of the reasons why once daily medications or the sustained release injections are very popular with the owners, because they just don't want to have to struggle and maybe even disrupt that owner-pet bond that they have by giving medication.
You stole the words out of my mouth right there, like the human-animal bond. I think sometimes because we do this so regularly, we forget how bad people feel about giving medications or doing the thing.
I don't even cut my own dog's toenails.
Right.
I see that look and I think, oh no, I can't cut her toenails. Oh my gosh, what if she hated taking a pill? I would feel so guilty.
Right. My dogs get like a half a jar of peanut butter for nail trims. It's like, I will pay you. I will pay you. I will pay you because I know you don't like this. And it's so hard for us to, I think, be human and be pet owners and to kind of be in that moment and forget like how hard this can be, especially when we know our pet doesn't like it. I always think about topical application time with my dogs. They're plowing over each other to get their preventatives. They love their preventatives. They can't wait to eat them. They're delicious. My cats, you get one and then you get one a day or two later because they see that tube coming out. They know you're going to do it and they're gone. And so I have a reaction to that because I feel like they hate it. I anthropomorphize because of how they respond. So I'm not going to call my vet and say, I'm not going to do this anymore because it makes me feel bad. And so then we just basically become completely non-compliant. So when you come in later, we find out, well, I stopped the meds or I just didn't do it or she really hated it. So I stopped. We're set up for failure there. So how important is the follow-up phone call? Is the check back in? Is the recheck in making sure compliance is happening?
I think it's really important. I think there are a lot of things that are important to that. I think one of the things in people that's really interesting is that the compliance has been linked with the relationship that those patients have with their physicians. And if they trust their physician, if they feel confident that they can call the physician or the practice and ask questions, they're actually been proven to be more likely to comply with treatment regimens. And so first of all, building that trust and saying, I know this is difficult. My own pet, I know I struggle with this. Make it a human thing. We're all human. We all struggle with it. So please feel comfortable calling. You may not speak to me directly, but I've got these other people in my practice who are absolutely wonderful at giving coaching where you can come in and be taught. And then our pet owners really, they need to feel invested in the treatment. Like they need to know why this is important and how important it is if they miss a treatment, what they should do if it's delayed. If they can get those follow-up phone calls from the practice, it doesn't have to be from the doctor. It doesn't have to be from the veterinary technician. It can be a really good communicator in the practice who's been trained. That's going to help as well, because it may be that the owners are going to feel more comfortable asking that person, how do I give a liquid medication to a cat? How do I get a pill in the dog? Am I hurting my pet if I hold it by the scruff when I put this on there? Is there a better way I can do this? And just trying to figure out ways that we can give them the support they need and the education they need to get the treatments done.
Yeah. And the relationship was a second aspect that you talk about in your article. And I have really been leaning into this in my lectures and with my client communications and with my education opportunities out there in the community with the professionals in the industry, in saying that our relationship with our clients is the thing that will set us up for honesty. It's the thing that will make it so that they say, I hear you, but I'm not going to be able to do that. Or I'm nervous about this, or I'm scared about this, or even just allow you to read their body language in a way that says, I don't think they're going to be comfortable with this. I think it goes back to when we've talked about this previously, which adjusting your expectations, adjusting your protocols, and adjusting your plan based on what really is going to work for that person's life. We can't get wrapped up in, well, this is a treatment that I use, and this is how I use it, and this is the only way, because there is no one best way for pet ownership and for pet parenting and for pet guardianship. And we really have to understand that meeting people where they are is the way we're going to get compliance.
Yes. We also need to stop making assumptions that people know how to do these things. I think one important thing that we could do is, just like when we're teaching an owner to give insulin and we have them practice giving the injections, how many of us have these owners practice giving eye drops or pills or liquid medications in front of us to see if they can have any sort of tips that'll make it better? And maybe it's not the veterinarian. Maybe the veterinarian sometimes seems too busy or too superior to them. Maybe it's a really well-trained communicator in the practice who could be doing this, who could be offering this, who could be comforting them and telling them, you know, you're doing a great job. This is exactly what it looked like the first time I tried this. But really training those people to do these techniques.
Plum's Veterinary Drugs is the must-have veterinary drug resource. With Plum's Veterinary Drugs, your number one source for drug information can always be right at your fingertips, on your phone, your tablet, or your desktop, wherever you need it. To learn more and subscribe, visit plumsveterinarydrugs.com. I want to dive into what you just said and expand on it a little bit. Compliance is a whole team task, right? We really want to educate and leverage everyone on the team to increase compliance in the clinic.
Yes, absolutely. It's a team thing. First of all, the owner's got to be part of the team. I don't think the pet wants to be part of the team. And then getting everybody involved. I have some ideas about that. And one is, like I've mentioned before, it doesn't necessarily have to be the veterinarian or the technician, but I think if you have somebody appointed in your hospital, one of those compassionate communicators who can contact the owners to find out, how's the pet doing? How's the treatment going? Have you been delayed in giving any of these? Can I reassure you that this one's okay? Or do you need to know that this medication is time dependent? That's important. And then having those intervening communications help identify issues that the owners are running into, provide the emotional support to the owner. They really are going to feel like the practice cares if someone is calling them. And it doesn't have to be the doctor. It doesn't have to be the technician. It just needs to be somebody who has good understanding of the owners and the compliance issues that they might need to run into. And then the other thing might be just for them to hear, it's okay if you have to give a little squeezed cheese or peanut butter to this pet, or this one has a dietary issue, but these are things you can offer. What are little things that we could do, like you mentioned about bribing with peanut butter, that will be okay, those extra calories, it's all right, we'll work on that later, let's just get this treatment in.
Absolutely, yes. I always tell people, we all go to work to get paid, so the bigger the task I'm asking, the more I'm going to pay my pets for doing it. And of course, as a veterinary technician and somebody who loves to talk leveraging the team, I love that you're talking about this great communicator, because we know there is someone in the practice who loves to talk to clients, like they love to do it. That's their jam. And they're probably underutilized to do that. Like we probably say it a million times, oh, Susie loves to talk to clients, but instead of appointing Susie to do just that, we just like talk about it instead of saying, how do we leverage that? So I love that as an aspect to improve our team and to really leverage what they enjoy, because we're increasing job satisfaction and retention and joy in what we like to do. I just think we miss the opportunity for that so often within our clinic. Now, to that kind of recheck, checking in, client communication point, one thing you talk about is not missing the opportunity to bring the patient in near the end of treatment, but not waiting until treatment should have happened or wait till 6 months, bringing them in as we're wrapping things up to kind of check on compliance and see where we need to go. Tell me more about this, because I think this is important.
I think one thing that provides us is, again, reconnecting with the owner And then the second thing is, if those owners bring in their medications and you know how many pills or how many milliliters of medication are supposed to be left in that bottle, and there's a lot more in there than you expected, or a lot less, we've had that happen as well. That is an immediate indicator that we've got an issue either with compliance or a misunderstanding of the instructions, which could either, in either case, be quite serious. I think that sort of check-in is going to be good for the health of the patient. I do think it's important for veterinary practices to charge for what they're worth. And so I think making that a part of the treatment plan is, you will be coming in for recheck. So the owner knows in advance, because your time is money, but a successful treatment is going to make that whole time much shorter for the patient.
We again play to that client relationship when we can show that concern, show that care. And I think we in general underutilize the rechecks and getting them back into the clinic as much as we can to create the best outcomes. I think sometimes we're scared to. So I'm glad that we talk about that in terms of compliance and success, instead of just saying, well, hopefully it's going well and we'll see them back in 6 months. Because I think we have a tendency to do that. Now, it ties in for me, I guess, to our Keep It Brief segment, which we almost never do. So not tons of pressure there on that. Tying into this whole conversation, we know compliance is not happening, or it could be better anyway. What are the key elements of the client conversation? Like, what are we doing for these better patient outcomes that are not just, and we've talked some about it in terms of being creative and watching them, but what are the key elements without using scare tactics to say, if we don't do this and this happens? Building that relationship is not always easy. Maybe this is the first time you've seen a client. Maybe this pet hasn't been to a vet in a long time and there's lots to uncover. How do we create successful relationships quickly when we have to?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think, again, that's going to end up being a practice by practice and owner by owner thing. But number one is making sure we provide appropriate information about the condition and about the treatment, making sure that it's organized, that it's very concise, succinct, so that the owners don't have a lot to wade through, but that's easy to understand. I want people to think about when they wake up in the morning and they haven't had that first cup of coffee, and how clearly are they thinking at that point in time? Or when they get home at night and the kids are cranky and the pets are hungry, how clearly are you really thinking? And so you want to shoot for kind of a fifth grade level of understanding. You're not talking down to people, but you want something that level of understanding will work for. Now, you test it out on your spouse, test it out on your children, test it out on somebody else and say, do you understand my instructions? Because we may believe that we're being perfectly clear, but it may be that our veterinary knowledge is actually muddying up what we're saying because we're making assumptions. So I think that's one of the first things, is make sure that the owners understand the importance of the treatment, why we're giving it, and how we're giving it. And then I think another thing is making sure that the owners don't feel embarrassed or guilty for admitting they are having trouble with compliance. Because if you do that, you are not going to have a success. That is so important that they need to realize we're all humans, we all make mistakes. And if the owners feel comfortable saying, I just cannot physically do 3 to 4 times a day daily drug treatments, that's not possible for me, then we can step back and say, let's look at some other regimens. That's so critical. And maybe some of us are a little bit behind the times. I mean, if you look at the latest consensus statement on cystitis, that reports that there are some dogs that either do not need antibiotics if it's uncomplicated, or they may only need 3 days of treatment. So if we are prescribing 2 weeks worth of drugs in an animal that really only needs 3 days of treatments, we're actually adding to that compliance issue. So thinking in terms of what is actually feasible and is it medically necessary? Let's not overburden because we think we should do this just in case. Let's make sure what's medically necessary as well.
Oh, that's such a salient point. I love that. Are we overdoing it? Are we setting them up for success and keeping things reasonable for their schedule? I love that. I think this is a great topic and I think it's an important thing. So I really appreciate you and your mom and all your co-authors chipping in here to bring this topic to light and to help us remember our role in client compliance and that we do have a role in setting them up for success. Dr. Tobias, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to today's guest for joining us, and thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. We appreciate if you leave us all the stars. You can listen to podcasts as well on our website at clinicians.brief.com/podcasts. You can find us at facebook.com/clinicians.brief, on Twitter @clinicians.brief, and on Instagram @clinicians.brief. You can also drop us a line at podcast@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief, the podcast, is a Brief Media production. Produced by Alexis Ustry. Sound by Randall Stupka. Hosted by me, Becky Mosser. With special thanks to production assistant Michelle Moncrez.